Did I hear you asking about the old man?
I thought so.
I don't remember when he first came. Nobody can. He was here when I arrived, long before the war. Perhaps he came to escape from civilization, much as I did myself. I had the feeling that he had done something, or something had been done to him that gave him a grudge against the world. I remember the first time I set eyes on him, I said to myself, I bet that old fellow is one hell of a character. Yes, he was living here beside the lake, with his wife. Funny sort of lash-up they had, exposed to all the weather, but they didn't seem to mind. I had been warned to give the old man who lived down by the lake a wide berth. He didn't care for strangers. So I went warily, and I didn't stay to pass the time of day. Nor would it have been any use if I had, not knowing a word of his lingo. The first time I saw him, he was standing by the edge of the lake, looking out to sea, and from tact I avoided passing close to him. Then, with an awkward feeling that I was trespassing, I bobbed down behind a clump of gorse, took out my spyglass, and had a peep at him. He was a big fellow, broad and strong. He's aged, of course, lately. I'm speaking of several years back, but even now you can see what he must have been once. Such power and drive behind him, and that fine head which he carried like a king. Who knows what royal blood he carries inside him, harking back to some remote forebear that gets the better of him and drives him fighting mad. I didn't think about it at the time. I just looked at him and ducked behind the gorse when I saw him turn. He went on staring out to sea, watching the gulls and the incoming tide, and presently he ambled off, heading for the wife and home. I didn't catch a glimpse of her that first day. She wasn't around. When I did see her, though, I was disappointed. She wasn't much to look at, after all. She hadn't got anything like his character. A placid, mild-tempered creature, I judged her. They had both come back from fishing when I saw them, and were making their way up from the beach to the lake. He was in front, of course. She tagged along behind. Neither of them took the slightest notice of me, and I was glad, because the old man might have paused and waited and told her to get on back home and then come down towards the rocks where I was sitting. I don't think he would have done anything. He'd just have started after me with those strange, narrow eyes of his and let me go. One thing that stood out, and you couldn't help noticing it, was that the pair of them were devoted to one another. I've seen her greet him when he came back from a day's fishing. He'd come straight onto the beach, and she would go to meet him, and they would embrace each other, not caring a damn who saw them. It was touching. You felt there was something lovable about the old man, if that's how things were between them. He might be a devil to outsiders, but he was all the world to her. You asked if they had any family. It's about the family I really wanted to tell you, because there was a tragedy, you see, and nobody knows anything about it except me. I could have told someone, but they might have taken the old man away, and she'd have broken her heart without him. Yes, they weren't always alone, as they are now. They had four kids, three girls and a boy. They brought up the four of them in that ramshackle old place by the lake. They were attractive youngsters, especially the youngest girl. I never knew her name, but I called her Tiny. She had so much go to her. I can see her now as a little thing, the first to venture paddling in the lake, way ahead of her sisters and the brother. The brother I nicknamed Boy. He was the eldest. He hadn't the looks of his sisters, and he was a clumsy sort of fellow. The girls would play around on their own and go fishing, and he'd hang about in the background, not knowing what to do with himself. If he possibly could, he'd stay around home, near his mother. Proper mother's boy. Not that she seemed to fuss over him any more than she did the others. She treated the four alike, as far as I could tell. Her thoughts were always for the old man, rather than for them. The boy was just a great baby, and I have an idea he was simple. Like the parents, the youngsters kept themselves to themselves. But they were used to me pottering about, fetching driftwood and that, and often I would pause and watch the kids playing by the lake. They used to look up when I passed by, then glance away again, sort of shy. All but Tiny. Tiny would toss her head and do a somersault, just to show off. I sometimes watched them go off, the six of them, the old man, the wife, boy, and the three girls, for a day's fishing out to sea. The old man, of course, in charge. Tiny, eager to help, close to her dad. The wife looking about to see if the weather was going to keep fine. The two other girls alongside. And boy, poor simple boy, always the last to leave home. Time passed, and the youngsters began to grow up. Tiny lost something of her individuality then, it seemed to me. She grew more like her sisters. They were a nice-looking trio, quiet, well-behaved. As for Boy, he was enormous, almost as big as the old man, but he had none of his father's looks or strength or personality. He was nothing but a great clumsy lout, and I believe the old man was ashamed of him. Out fishing, he was perfectly useless. The girls would work away like beetles, with Boy always in the background making a mess of things. If his mother was there, he just stayed by her side. I could see it rattled the old man to have such an oaf of a son. In any normal family, of course, Boy would have left home by now and gone out to work. Well, they did leave home at last. At least the girls did. It was a day in late autumn, and I happened to be over doing some shopping in the little town overlooking the harbour, and suddenly I saw the old man, the wife, the three girls, and Boy all making their way up to Pont. That's at the head of a creek going eastward from the harbour. There are a few cottages at Pont and a farm and a church up behind. The family looked washed and spruced up, and so did the old man and the wife. And I wondered if they were going visiting. It was an unusual thing for them to do, but it's possible they had friends of whom I knew nothing. Anyway, that was the last I saw of them, on the fine Saturday afternoon, making for Pont. It blew hard over the weekend, a proper easterly gale. I kept indoors and didn't go out at all. I knew the seas would be breaking good and hard on the beach. I wondered if the old man and the family had been able to get back. It was Tuesday before the wind dropped, and I went down to the beach again. Seaweed, driftwood, tar and oil all over the place. I looked up the lake, towards the old man's shack, and I saw him there with the wife just by the edge of the lake. But there was no sign of the youngsters. I thought it a bit funny and waited around in case they should appear. They never did. I walked right round the lake, and from the opposite bank I had a good view of their place, and even took out my old spyglass to have a closer look. The old man was pottering about, as he often did when he wasn't fishing, and the wife had settled herself down to bask in the sun. There was only one explanation. They had left the family with friends in Pont. I can't help admitting I was relieved. For one frightful moment I thought they had started off back home on the Saturday night and got struck by the gales, that the old man and his wife had got back safely, but not the kids. It couldn't be that, though. Someone would have said something. The old man wouldn't be pottering there in his usual unconcerned fashion, and the wife basking in the sun. No, they had left the family with friends, or maybe the girls and Boy had gone up country, gone to find themselves jobs at last. Somehow it left a gap. I felt sad. I'd more or less watched them grow up, and now, for no reason, they had gone. I never saw the girls again. They just didn't come back. Once I thought I saw Tiny somewhere up the estuary with a group of friends, but I couldn't be sure. If it was, she'd grown. She looked different. I think the old man and the wife took them with a definite end in view that last weekend and either settled them with friends they knew or told them to shift for themselves. I know it sounds hard. No doubt he thought it would be for the best, and so it probably was. And if only I could know for certain what happened to the girls, especially Tiny, I wouldn't worry. But I do worry sometimes, because of what happened to Boy. You see, Boy was fool enough to come back. He came back about 3 weeks after that final weekend. I had walked down through the woods, rounded the lake by the marshes to the north, some distance from the old man's place, and the first thing I saw was Boy. He was just standing by the marsh. He looked dazed. He was too far off for me to hail him. Besides, I didn't have the nerve. But I watched him as he stood there in his clumsy, loutish way. and I saw him staring at the far end of the lake. He was staring in the direction of the old man. The old man and the wife with him took not the slightest notice of Boy. They were close to the beach by the plank bridge and were either just going out to fish or coming back. And here was Boy, with his dazed, stupid face. Not only stupid, but frightened. I wanted to say, "Is anything the matter?" But I didn't know how to say it. I stood there like Boy, staring at the old man. And then the old man lifted his head and saw Boy. He must have said a word to his wife, because she didn't move. She stayed where she was, by the bridge. But the old man turned like a flash of lightning and came down the other side of the lake towards the marshes, towards Boy. He looked terrible. I shall never forget his appearance. That magnificent head I had always admired, now angry, evil, and he was cursing Boy as he came. Boy, bewildered, scared, looked hopelessly about him for cover. There was none, only the thin reeds that grew beside the marsh. But the poor fellow was so dumb he went in there and crouched and believed himself safe. It was a horrible sight. I was just getting my own courage up to interfere when the old man stopped suddenly in his tracks, pulled up short as it were, and then, still cursing, muttering, turned back again and returned to the bridge. Boy watched him from his cover of reeds, then came out onto the marsh again with some idea, I suppose, of striking for home. I looked about me. There was no one to give any help, and if I went and tried to get someone, they would tell me not to interfere. I waited quite a time beside the lake, but nothing happened. It began to grow dark. It was no use my waiting there. The old man and the wife left the bridge and went on home. Boy was still standing there on the marsh by the lake's edge. I called to him softly. "It's no use. He won't let you in. Go back to Pont, anywhere, but get out of here." He looked up, that same queer, dazed expression on his face, and I could tell he hadn't understood a word I said. I felt powerless to do any more. I went home myself. But I thought about Boy all evening, and in the morning I went down to the lake again, and I took a great stick with me to give me courage. Not that it would have been much good. Not against the old man. Well, I suppose they had come to some sort of agreement during the night. There was Boy by his mother's side, and the old man was pottering on his own. It was a great relief. I blamed the mother a good deal. After all, it was up to her to tell Boy he was in the way, that the old man was in one of his moods, and Boy had best get out while the going was good. But I never did think she had great intelligence. She did not seem to show much spirit at any time. However, what arrangement they had come to worked for a time. Boy stuck close to his mother, and the old man left them alone and was more and more by himself. He took to sitting down by the bridge, humped, staring out to sea with a queer, brooding look on him. I didn't like it. I don't know what his thoughts were, but I'm sure they were evil. It suddenly seemed a very long time since he and the wife and the whole family had gone fishing, a happy, contented party. Now everything had changed for him. He was thrust out in the cold, and the wife and Boy stayed together. I felt sorry for him, but frightened too, because I felt it could not go on like this indefinitely. Something would happen. One day I went down to the beach for driftwood. It had been blowing in the night, and when I glanced towards the lake, I saw that Boy wasn't with his mother. He was back where I'd seen him that first day on the edge of the marsh. There he was, back on the marsh, a great, big, frightened, foolish fellow, and there was the old man outside his home staring down towards his son with murder in his eyes. I said to myself, "He's going to kill him." The mother was useless. She would not prevent it. If only Boy would see one little grain of sense and go. I watched and waited until nightfall. Nothing happened. It rained in the night. It was grey and cold and dim. December was everywhere, trees all bare and bleak. I couldn't get down to the lake until late afternoon, and then the skies had cleared and the sun was shining in that watery way it does in winter, a burst of it, just before setting below the sea. I saw the old man, and the wife, too. They were close together by the old shack, and they saw me coming, for they looked towards me. Boy wasn't there. He wasn't on the marsh, either, nor by the side of the lake. I crossed the bridge and went along the right bank of the lake, and I had my spyglass with me, but I couldn't see Boy. Yet all the time I was aware of the old man watching me. Then I saw him. I scrambled down the bank and crossed the marsh and went to the thing I saw lying there, behind the reeds. He was dead. There was a great gash on his body, dried blood on his back. But he had lain there all night. The body was sodden with the rain. I began to cry, like an idiot, and I shouted across to the old man, "You murderer!" He did not answer. He did not move. He stood there, outside his shack with the wife, watching me. You'll want to know what I did. I went back and got a spade, and I dug a grave for Boy in the reeds behind the marsh, and I said one of my own prayers for him, being uncertain of his religion. When I had finished, I looked across the lake to the old man. And do you know what I saw? I saw him lower his great head and bend towards her and embrace her. And she lifted her head to him and embraced him too. It was both a requiem and a benediction, an atonement and a giving of praise. In their strange way, they knew they had done evil, but now it was over, because I had buried Boy and he was gone. They were free to be together again, and there was no longer a third to divide them. They came out into the middle of the lake, and I suddenly saw the old man stretch his neck and beat his wings, and he took off from the water, full of power, and she followed him. I watched the two swans fly out to sea, right into the face of the setting sun, and I tell you it was one of the most beautiful sights I ever saw in my life. The two swans flying there, alone, in winter.
Anna Massey was reading The Old Man by Daphne du Maurier. The producer was Duncan Minchell.